You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Tuesday. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers, who are on their way back from their road trip, ready for Victor Oladipo's return Wednesday. And because of Vic's return, we're doing a specialer week where me and Adam do all the shows. So as always, I'm one of your hosts, Tony East, covering the team for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News. And of course, like I just said, on the line with me for a mailbag episode, Adam Friedman. Adam, you ready to just answer some questions?
Yeah, can I tell you something really embarrassing, though, before we start?
I love embarrassing.
So we came on, and I didn't realize my mic wasn't plugged in, but luckily I got it plugged in enough time to talk first.
Ooh, look at
almost
you.
Didn't have, like, I've got an entire pocket that my mic plugged in, and it sounds probably terrible, and I would never realize it.
I've always wondered if people would like our outtakes, like if I tweeted the, like, right when we start a segment and screw up and then redo it. Like,
oh, what? That's actually not as often people think. More it's like us like debating the entire half an hour before we start the show and blowing all our important facts out early.
That's true. I wondered if people would like those. That would be fun. Let's just do it, though. A lot of questions from Twitter. Thank you all for responding to me and the show. Of course, at Lockdown Pacers, you can find the opportunities when we do this. Usually when there's big gaps between games, we like to do this. With Vic coming back, great opportunity. First one, Wine Sherpa 1 at Wine Sherpa 1. Very easy. Will Vic be on a minutes restriction upon his return? Nate didn't dodge the question. That's unfair. But he was asked this, and he said, they will have to work it out with the team of people who are blah, blah, blah on the decision committee for this, or whatever. But yes, I think the answer is obviously yes, right?
Yeah, I think it depends what kind of shape he's in. And I'm going to assume, because they always say this, that you're not in game shape until you actually play games. That he's going to need at least 2 weeks just to get into game shape. You would think by this point he's 100% healthy, so there's no like concern about a re-injury. And that's why it's a minute restriction. It mainly would just be because he needs to get into shape where he can play 8-10 straight intense minutes. Because, right, I think a kind of signature of Victor Oladipo, especially towards the kind of end of that first really great year he had with us, was that he would play like 10 minutes in the fourth quarter and he would be dominant for all 10 minutes. That was like a signature, because he could just go 10-minute quarters and dominate. And that's how he separated himself from what was at the time probably a good basketball player to a great basketball player, so that he could just put up these great stretches at the end of games. So
let me rephrase the question for you, Adam. And I'm, do you think he plays 30 minutes or more any time until the All-Star break? Because I would say no to that.
Yeah, I don't think so. The only way I see it happening is if he gets right at 30.
Yeah, right at 30 in an overtime game. I agree.
Yeah, or something where like it's a really close game and he's playing really well and they decide, well, you know, he's at 20 minutes, we'll bring him at 10 minutes in the fourth quarter, let him roll kind of thing.
Right.
Close.
Second question. We're going to be flying through some of these because we got a lot. Thank you, everybody. Second question. I have a screenshot, but the person who asked me the question can just say it. So, Marina, go ahead.
It's probably going to be less eloquent than the screenshot, even though that one was really bad too. So, basically, my question I asked last week to Adam, and he said, save it for a mailbag because other people might have the same question. So, with Vic coming back, obviously, he is probably an all-star. I say that because I'm not actually sure. Is he an all-star? Okay, yeah, he's an all-star. Or he was. And you have all of these other people, like Malcolm Brogdon was number two on the Bucks, right?
Three on the Bucks.
Yeah. Number three. But he came to the Pacers to be like number one while Vic was gone, technically. And Sabonis has been really good. And I'm just having a question of like, when he comes back, are all of these new people like Malcolm and Jeremy Lamb and Justin Holiday and Aaron Holiday and TJ Warren, are they going to be okay with settling into less impressive roles when Vic comes back? Is that like a risk? How much of their practice has been devoted to like just building chemistry? I have questions.
That's the big one, right? Chemistry when he comes back is a big deal. For some of these guys, I think it's easier to answer. For Brogdon and Jeremy Lamb specifically, like, they chose the Pacers. They knew this was going to be the case, right? So they, like, Jeremy Lamb specifically knew, like, I'm not going to start the whole season. And Brogdon knew, and every question Brogdon got at Media Day was like, how do you think you'll fit with Vic? Oh my God, you excited to play with Vic? Like, he knew at some, like, he is not the guy. And he's even talked about recently, like, my percentages will get better playing alongside this other star guard, and like, it will be a dynamic duo. So I think everybody kind of knows, but it's when you get to the hairier guys, or like, just, you said Justin Holiday or Aaron Holiday, even, who will lose a ton of their role potentially. That's when it gets a little hairier, but I don't think anyone is like I think everybody knew it was coming when the season started.
Yeah, I think the only players who are at risk of losing a kind of playing different amount of minutes or roles, like Lamb is really going to probably play like a different role, but it's going to probably be around the same minutes, maybe more like 25 instead of 29, but like his impact will not change, is what I mean, right? He's going to end up still playing a ton of minutes, being important on this team. The guys you're going to look at are McConnell and Holiday. Do they get reduced? And then the other one probably is TJ Warren, because he's sort of actually, he's been kind of the, we don't have him going tonight, go find his bucket kind of guy. He won't be that guy anymore. He might still be it sometimes, but instead of being it like, feels like every third night he has a, you know, a 11 of 15 game for 25 points. It might happen every, you know, six game or whatnot, or every night, because of play example. So, but I think like for guys like Sabonis, the role probably stays the same. I mean, instead of running pick and rolls with Brogdon, it's be running with Brogdon and Oladipo. I think for Brogdon, it's actually a better role, right? He's same minutes probably, but just, you know, more of a number two and a sidekick, which I think he might prefer, because you'll see his efficiency go up. Turner, I mean, maybe a little less shots, a little bit less everything that he has right now, but Turner's role defensively is still going to be really prominent, and offensively, you know, he's going to kind of be the when everybody doubles team guys, you'll be wide open, take the shot if you have a kind of player still. So
that's right. How I view it. I agree. Marina, did we satisfy your answers?
My only other thing, not to draw it out because I know you have lots of questions, but for those people that you say their roles are going to get hairy, like, I'm just thinking in the sense of chemistry, it's really big about being like, oh, I'm a meaningful part of this team, where had they like shown out like Sabonis level of being an all-star, maybe they could have still started if Vic had, I don't know. They don't all play the same position, but like, they're not going to be upset, right?
No.
Maybe they have to realize that that's just their life.
Yes, pretty much.
I think too much about their personal.
They all knew what they signed up for. And the problem they're going to have, which is going to be a good problem, is that they're going to be a really good team that's 10 deep. And when you're winning games, that solves a lot of problems. So like, even if a guy like McConnell Holiday is playing less minutes, if they're still winning, they won't become a problem, because winning ultimately kind of cures all issues.
That's true. Thanks, Marina.
Okay. Yeah, goodbye.
The next question comes from @Indiana_Sirs. His name is Victor Olajeo on Twitter. I hate these. This is a random tangent. I hate when I know the person's name in real life, but it's not the name on their Twitter account, because I don't know.
Just call them out.
I don't know if people want to know their name. I've met him before at a game.
Call him.
He says, hey, first time caller. Although I believe he's asked questions before. Love that phrase.
Definitely has. It sounds familiar. I forget. Maybe you know, I all the time. I don't know.
How do you see Nate juggling minutes going forward, assuming everyone stays healthy and McDermott stays on fire? I'll hang up and listen to your answer. Love the phrasing. This is not a radio show, but I like the first time caller jokes. We've talked about this before, but like, especially with McDermott going just ham on this road trip, like he's in and the starters are all in and Lamb's the sixth man. So the question is, does he go 10 deep? Like Adam has tried to do before, or does he go 9? And if he does go 9, who does he cut? Me and Adam have actually deferred on who we think stays in the rotation. I think it's TJ McConnell and Justin Holiday, but we will see. It's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I think he tries to go 10. I have a hard time believing everybody will be healthy for enough games in a row anyways for that to make a difference, right? I feel like over the next 30 games, if I had to guess, over the next 30 games, at least one of the guard forwards will be hurt for 20 of those 30 games. So, or maybe won't play because of an illness or fit back to back, whatever kind of thing. But I think he might try to go 10 deep. I mean, he tried to start the year, right? And it feels
with
like
Sumner as the 10th guy.
Yeah, but this time, you know, your 10th guy is a guy. Yeah, it's Aaron, who's maybe at times been your sixth best player.
Right,
or maybe even your top three player at times.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's had his games where he's insane.
You know, I think the question will become, and hopefully he talks to the guys, it's going to be about matchups ultimately, right? I mean, you know, the playoffs are going to be, I mean, that's kind of what the goal is, right? It's going to be about, you know, if they play let's say they get to the 3 seed and play Philly, right? Well, let's say they're down 2-1 to Philly, right? Well, it's going to be like, what adjustment can they make to throw Philly off, right? And that might be switching McConnell off for Holiday or the reverse or whatever it is, or something like that. I'm talking about Aaron Holiday, right? So, I mean, yeah. I think that's kind of, the goal is to kind of just keep guys kind of fresh. One, because an injury could happen any moment. Lamb gets hurt, it feels like every other day. Let's be real. same with Brogdon. I can't say the same thing with him. He feels like he gets hurt every other day. So it's just, you know, it's about, I guess, keeping enough these guys fresh up to play. But like I said, I think if they win enough games, it'll cure all. And I think this just creates them to be more versatile in the playoffs. When
I agree. I think Justin Holiday shooting second best in the league 3-point percentage in January kind of cemented his spot. But we'll see.
Yeah, I think the spacing, I think the question becomes, if you put Holiday in, you end up with this amazingly spaced out lineup around Lamb essentially as a point guard, and that's maybe what you decide to do, and that's the only question. Really, it's around Sabonis ultimately, right? That's
right. Kind
of spacing out. But it's interesting, right? Because I think that's one kind of one weakness, right? He can't shoot the three, and if you basically run point Sabonis or point, whatever you call it, point center, you basically put four shooters around Sabonis and let him figure it out, and you know, that might be a recipe for him to have like eight assists a game all of a sudden.
Right. All right. We're gonna go a little faster through these, but that's okay. Next is Arus at Arus, A-Y-R-U-U-S, U-U-U-S, 20 U's there. One, how much of an impact did Kobe have in both of your desires to cover and enjoy basketball? Coverage, zero. Enjoyment, quite a bit. He was very good. He was one of those guys that I think everyone who's ever played basketball, like middle school or higher, has impersonated him at some point, right? Like.
Yeah, I mean, he was the defining basketball player of my youth, I think. I mean, not my beginning youth, I guess. Like, I got in the NBA, like 03, 04 range. That was basically from then, 2010, I remember watching all those finals with Kobe. That was his peak, I would say, almost, was that kind of time. I mean, he dominated the league those 6 years. I mean, I know LeBron was there, and LeBron was kind of coming up, but, like, Kobe was really the guy who everybody held as the gold standard, and LeBron was still kind of number two. He hadn't won a title yet. And Duncan was there, too, don't get me wrong, but it was, like, Kobe was the gold standard for those, like...
Well, you know what's funny? I was thinking about this when I saw this question earlier. It's, like, no one goes on their driveway and, like, impersonates Tim Duncan or Shaq. Like, that's just boring. No one wants to shoot just, like, three-footers all the time.
Yeah, and, I mean, that's the thing is he was...
That's what Kobe and LeBron have going for them.
Yeah, and he was he was a shooting guard, and shooting guards are just like those guard players are always more popular than big men. It's been, you know, from Steph to Kobe to Michael. I mean, he was basically like a Michael Jordan light, right? He didn't quite have as many titles, MVP and stuff like that, but he was like the closest thing NBA got to him, and he was the replacement for him ultimately, I guess, it felt like. Right.
He's also said, if you prefer Pacers, what player do you think will fall out of the rotation once Oladipo returns? See, first question, but Aaron Holiday is my answer.
Defer.
AJ Reese coming in with four questions, so we're gonna have to go flinging through these at AJ Reese 1313. One, if you get married, will you invite any of the Locked On Pacers fans to your weddings? Absolutely not.
I'm not getting married anytime soon, so I'm not gonna answer that question.
Absolutely not. Two, favorite jersey as a kid. I like that one. I have a Cadillac Williams jersey. I know that's not basketball. I love that. My favorite basketball jersey, I have a Kings Peja jersey.
You want to know the first jersey I bought? It's going to be really sad.
Ooh.
It was a number 8 Kobe in 04 at the NBA store. Oh,
that is really sad.
Yeah, I bought a number 8 Kobe, a 32 Shaq, and a Yao Ming jersey. I don't know what I was thinking back then. Those are the three I bought. I went to the NBA store in New York when I was probably 7 years old. First time I'd just been to it. It was like, those were the three I picked out. My mom was like, you could buy three jerseys, and that's what I did.
Best nicknames for the bench unit as a whole? I don't have one there. That's a great question. We do need something for that.
I've got one.
Okay, go ahead.
Sabonis in space.
Sabonis in space.
Or that's Sabonis good. In space. Something off Sabonis in space because they kind of a little
he makes him go, right. Sabonis in space.
That He's might
among
be
the planets.
Yeah. Something like along those. I don't know. We can maybe establish one and then like that'll be the nickname going forward. The broadcast tried to do that. Fox Sports, I forgot what they called it though, so it wasn't a good enough nickname, I guess.
Yeah. They have the 7-11 pick and roll. I know, I like that.
Yeah,
and four awesome. Is if you could spend a day with any player in the league, who would you choose?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Great question. I don't know. I would interview them all and say who likes Rocket League, and then I'd play Rocket League with one of them, and that would be our day together. But I don't know.
You know, I feel like this is weird, but I just want to spend a day with Kyrie Irving just to see what he's like. Like, he's a weird dude. And I don't. I honestly find him kind of a borderline annoying a lot of times, just because he's like that MLK comparison was the worst.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just so unself-aware of the situation. In
that was weird. World.
But I just want to just see who he is for a day, almost.
All right. Next up. Is Matthew Jefferson at @_realMJJ. What does the next 3 years look like for this core, and where does Jeremy Lamb fit with the plan? I like that. Part of the reason this question is interesting, I think this core and the most of this team stays the same because of their cap situation, unless they make a ginormous trade, which is really hard to predict at this point in time. But I think it's mostly going to stay the same, and they'll just try to build it as far as they can. I mean, they're basically like, if Aaron Holiday becomes a super great player, like all of a sudden they have 8 playoff quality guys who are really good. So I think they're just going to ride it out and try to win some playoff series with these guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point you're writing improvements, it looks like. I mean, Sabonis improved, Warren's improved.
Right.
You're under that with them.
If Turner Sabonis works in the playoffs, I don't think they – I think this is your three-year core, basically, is what they have right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, who knows how the East shakes up in a year and, you know, with injuries and whatnot. I mean, this team is – if when Vic returns, we'll see what the ceiling is. But, I mean, this team does have a ceiling of, like, Eastern Conference final potential. I mean, I guess what I could see someday is if they like, what's the issue to make the Eastern Conference finals and lose to the Bucks in like five? Next year, the same thing happens. Then you maybe talk about, okay, how do you flip Turner for a guy that helps you win right now? But that's right. What I could see. I mean, you know, this, I definitely think they have a shot of being the second best team in the East the next 3 years. It's just how do you get over, once you kind of get to that point, how do you get over the hump? And maybe, you know, maybe you get some luck with injuries or, you know, aging Lakers, Clippers, who knows?
I think if they win a series, maybe we have a conversation about trading a young player for a more solidified player. But
yeah, I mean, I think you really need 2 years of, you know.
We got to see some success.
If you prove you're one of the 4 to 6 best teams in the East, then you start having a question, like, how do I get to be the best team? Versus right now, the goal is just to be one of those 4 to 6 teams.
Where does Jeremy Lamb fit with the plan? See also Sean Livingston for the Warriors, et cetera, basically. That's how I feel about that.
That's fair. Definitely.
Just that, like, 10 minutes where, you know, Vic or Brogdon or both are out, you just say, all right, don't get us killed on offense in these minutes. And if you can do that, great. And if you can't, then we'll have another conversation.
Well, then occasionally they'll have an occasional like 7 of 7 for 18 points and he'll win the game for you.
Yeah. Jarrett Binford firing off 4 questions. Next time we do this, I'm limiting this to 1 per person.
I told you to do that.
You did tell me to do it. I completely forgot. I'm sorry. 1, we all know Nate likes to leave the starters in when the Pacers are up big. But we also feel like he's been riding the hot hand lately. Is it my imagination, or has he been relying on whoever has it going more often this season than in the past? Reasons? Yeah, he actually is, I think, doing that. I agree. And I think it's just because this team has guys who are more – their success is more dependent on matchup than in years past.
I think, too, this is the best bench they've had in his
career
for him, right? I mean, they've never been this deep. I mean, before it's been like, can the bench survive? Now it's like the bench can carry this team at times. So if Doug McDermott is 6 of 7, let's let him keep going. If TJ McConnell has 9 assists, let him keep going kind of stuff.
Exactly. And, like, to my point, and not that I didn't care about your point, but, like, Darren Collison, doesn't matter who he's playing against. Like, his role's the same. Corey Joseph, same thing. Like, they didn't really have a hot hand kind of guy last year to ride, you know?
No, the team is so much better than it was. Yeah. I mean, just by a mile.
You're right. Second part of the question is actually funny. Not real question, just a prompt. Please spend 10 minutes talking about how effective Doug McDermott has been this stretch. Just talk about that sweet release. Yeah, we're not going to go 10 minutes, but
how about 10 seconds?
He was absurd on the road trip. He got them into the Jazz game even when they lost that game by 30, but like he had them kind of in it for a while. He literally won them the Nuggets game. He was amazing in so many different games that he was ridiculous. And yes, his form is beautiful.
In my opinion, he's become the newest iteration of Kyle Korver, finally.
Oh, yeah, movement shooter. Flies off the same screen every possession and still gets the shot.
Yep, I think before it was like that's who he could be at his peak, and now he's at his peak with that.
Number 3, hot take question. Is TJ Warren the best on-ball defender this season for the Pacers? No disrespect to Brogdon or Jay Holiday, etc. The two guys you said no disrespect to, I think, are 1 and 2, but TJ Warren might be number 3, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, him and Holiday are the two most consistent, too.
Well, McConnell's got that full-court pressure stuff going on, but I mean, he's too tiny to like lump in. It's unfair, but he can only guard a certain number of guys.
Warren is a very decent defender this year, which is a huge improvement from what he was
before. Unbelievable improvement. But no, Brogdon's my answer.
Yeah, I think Brogdon. I mean, Brogdon has to play. The problem is Warren and Holiday have been more consistent because they played more games, but that's still
right. Final question. Do you and Adam ever go to the games together? If not, y'all should have a great game night for Vic's return. Enjoy it and keep up the good work.
So have we not been to 2 games together, technically?
We have been to three. Yes, that's right.
3? No, we were so let's put us. Hold on. We went to the Raptors game together and watched that when Lance had that amazing quarter.
Yes.
We were at the same game together, not in the same spot, but you were watching from the press box out in that family for the Magic game this year.
That's right. And then we went to the Jazz game together this
year. Yes. Where I did the Jazz radio and you
jazz
did.
Jazz radio. Yeah, we went to that Raptors game when they lit up the circle. That was fun.
Yeah, we had to walk through the whole thing.
They are undefeated and games are both at though. So.
Yeah, that is true. They are 3-0.
That is the real good work is that we are there. Thank you for the question. Sam Bryant at SJB710. Victor will most likely be on a minutes restriction. Yes. Do you think he should come off the bench when he returns and eventually move into the starting lineup or put him with the starters right away? You know, I thought it was funny that Nate said, "Oh, we don't know if he's going to start or come off the bench, right? Like he's going to start." But I understand the question. You know, like they're rolling. Maybe you think about like, okay, let's ease him in and sub him in and have this crazy huge moment. But I think he's going to start.
Yeah, I think it's
throw everybody into their rest of the season roles.
Yeah, I guess if you put him at the bench, you're kind of admitting that he's maybe not ready yet, and then why play him at all, right? You know, you can just – to me, starting and bench doesn't really matter. It's who closes and how many minutes you play, right? So if you think he's not that ready yet, you can just reduce his minutes and when he plays.
Right.
Like starting is kind of an overrated stat and just in general, right? It's more who closing than who starts games. It's
just, right.
That's how I do it.
All right, next up, Charlie Nichols at From the Raptors. Interesting. Kyle Lowry holding a championship trophy. In his profile picture. Charlie, love that you follow me and you're a Raptors fan. I've seen Oladipo say he intends to hit the ground running and he wouldn't be on the court unless he was ready. Do you think it's realistic to expect a big performance from him out of the gate, especially since it's versus the Bulls? It'd be a hell of a wake-up call to the NBA if he did. Adam, what do you think?
I don't know.
I think the Bulls are a good chance for him to have a good game. Like, they're just not a particularly awesome perimeter defense team. They kind of have gimmicky coverage. But it's also a good team for him to defer against, right? Like, Turner just crushed them. So if he just throws it to his postman, he could have, like, 8 assists and look like he's like, oh, look, I'm part of the team.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I think my problem is it goes both ways, right, with the Bulls, because they're such a bad team. You could either be really successful against and kind of become, like, almost back to form, or you could just kind of, like, ease yourself in. It's
right.
I don't know if it matters the opponent is, I guess, to do that in, but the Bulls are especially an easy opponent to choose one of those options, I guess.
Right. Yeah, I don't. Another thing is, like, I don't know if he will go, like, just go for a crazy scoring game or anything like that. Like, I don't think he'll be coming out the gate playing like that.
I feel like the key is efficiency, right? So, like, you know how Zion made 4 short threes, that kind of thing, right? 6 of 7, 8 of 10 games.
Right.
Where you prove, like, you're really efficient.
Well, that might be the best 3-point shooting game of his career in game number one.
Maybe. That's very fair.
Yeah, we'll see. That's interesting. But I expect like 14-4 is what I would guess.
I would even go less. I would expect like 12-4. I don't know. I don't think it's gonna be the high scoring yet, but who knows? Maybe he'll surprise us, I guess.
All right. At I'm Goat 10, Domas All-Star Season is his name. Love that. How likely do you guys think Vic agrees to a max contract with us in free agency or whenever he's eligible to extend? The 2020 free agency class is deep with a lot of teams having cap space. I feel it's essentially tie him down, especially with our current roster of great players. Man, it sucks that we're talking about this now. It's going to be weird. So he can get offered an extension this summer, but it's not his max. I have said many times I expect him to decline that and just opt for the max in free agency. But like, if he is not amazing this season, you know, maybe that conversation is a little different.
Yeah. He's not going to take whatever contract this summer is because he can't be his full max. I mean, that's
right.
Right.
And he'll better on himself for sure.
Yeah. I mean, what's the max you get this summer? Like, can he get his salary plus 120%?
Yes. 120% of his salary. So I think his max extension would be like 4 years, 110 maybe.
Right, he made 21, so you do 125.
But he could sign for 5 for like 250, not that high, but 5 for like 200 the next summer. So he would just wait.
Yeah, I mean, right, because the max contract for a guy who's he might even do a thing where he might bet on himself for a 2-year deal to get back in at year 10.
Right.
You know, that's out of possibility.
Leaving the Heat are the only team that I would think he would go to that isn't the Pacers.
I guess
I honestly think he will stay though.
The question I have is if he decides he wants like that. Take that hill because he takes less money per se to help the team sign somebody, but they're so capped out, it's not going to matter, right?
Doesn't
whether
matter.
He makes 25 or 30, because not going to be in the luxury tax anyways,
right? Doesn't matter.
So I mean, I don't know why he wouldn't wait. And I mean, I think we'll have a he'll give a commitment this summer. I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I don't see him leaving. I feel like he's embraced the city way too much, and it would be such a Paul George move of him to want to leave. And I don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I do think he wants to hit that. I know he made a lot of money, don't be wrong, but like, I mean, I guess it's $200 million for me. $80 million is not that different, to be honest. But it's like another level of life changing money, right?
Right.
Versus like, you know, like, all right, because like they always have the second NBA contract. You always want to hit that one because your rookie deal is so much lower than your second contract. But he made a lot of money, so I'm not sure he's that worried about it.
Right. All right, Logan Miller at Orange Crew with crew spelled C-R-U. Two very different questions. One, do the Pacers have to use their MLE either all or partial to re-sign Jay Holiday? No, they will have something called non-burden rights to sign him to a three-year deal that starts at 120% of his current salary if they keep his capital on the books.
So like six something, right?
A little under six. I mean, I guess they would try to do that. I don't know why they wouldn't try to do that because they don't have that option with any other player in the entire NBA. So
wait, can they do that with him and then still have their MLE?
They'd have the full MLE if they get him to agree to a non-bird deal, yes, which would be...
probably give him a three-year deal then, right? He's not going to... because he wants guaranteed money.
Absolutely. He's probably stoked he's playing so well because... right. Send him a new deal. Two!
Hold on real fast. What do you think he gets in free agency real fast if he was, if he goes...
if he finishes the year over 40%, I bet the Lakers or Clippers will give him the entire MLE they have.
So then the base have to match that theoretically.
Yes, exactly. Two! I love what McConnell has brought to the bench this year, but do you think he limits their ceiling in the playoffs due to lack of spacing? Let's ask the Sixers, who benched him in the playoffs last year. So,
okay, possibly. But the Sixers are some genius franchise, right?
The difference is the Sixers had no shooting at all.
And they have the worst. They have the biggest black hole shooter in the NBA.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, they have the opposite of shooting. But the thing is, I don't think he raises the ceiling either because he's, we all know what he's good at, but in a slowed down game, is he going to be like the thing that changes the game? No, he's not. But I don't think he'll kill you. Like if he has zero turnovers, he can't be a negative to me.
We shouldn't forget two playoffs ago, he literally basically subbed out Ben Simmons and helped the team win the playoffs.
He did.
I mean, I know it's isolated and Ben's rookie year and all those things, but let's not forget that's they actually were better with him than Ben Simmons for a little bit in that playoff run.
That's true. Friend of the pod, Chris Carey at CHJ Carey. What is your favorite impact stat and why? Adam, do you even have one?
Hold on. Let me look what I usually use. So what do you mean by impact stat, I guess?
An advanced stat, basically.
Advanced stat. So my favorite advanced stat is actually distant shot percentage.
Ooh.
I think it really is going to show the picture of how a player is successful, right? So, I think it helps the Pacers. They're a very odd team, right? They don't have, these high-volume three-point shooters like every other team has. They're not shooting a ton of threes. But, I love looking at TJ Warren's because his 0-3 foot range is ridiculous. Oladipo used to be crazy for a guy who would go to the rim and attack it the way he did. In the size, he'd have a ridiculous inside 3 feet range. I think it's interesting when you look at those kind of distant shots to see how well guys are with that 3 feet and how the guys that can succeed around the rim are the best players in the league, usually, offensively at least.
I'm going to interpret this to assume he means all-in-one stats that are an attempt to rank based off impact. I've actually fallen a little bit out of love with all-in-one stats this year, and by a little bit, I mean quite a bit.
You mean is that you're talking war, things like that?
BPM, PIPM, stuff like that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But BPM this year, I felt like it's been the most in line with what I see, which is how I assess them. But I've always liked PIPM in the past as well. So those two are my personal favorite. There's a lot of good ones.
You know what really sucks though? Not very good.
PER.
Yeah, PER
is terrible. It's the formula for PER is the funniest thing ever. I might tweet it tomorrow as a response to this show.
Yeah, and I would say box plus minus is not very good either. But
I like BPM.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's still some kind
of my faves. I don't know. I like the box score component, but I probably violate box score too much. Nate Thomas 79. His name is Nate Thomas. That's easy and obvious. What will it take to get Miles to drive the ball to the hoop? Confidence and unwavering support from his coach.
I think he's never going to do that unless he has.
I also think he will never.
I think he's just not. He's not that type of player. He's a really, really good defensive player, and he's a limited offensive player who, when he's shooting 40% from three, is a super effective player. But he's never going to be the drive to the rim, dunk over dudes kind of player because he is what, in his sixth year now?
Yeah.
Fifth year now. And players don't tend to change unless something else. I mean, I get he's only 23, he's going to be 24 in March. So he could still theoretically change, but I think he's the player he is. And I think we should accept that and embrace it because the player he is a pretty damn good player.
I agree.
Even if it could be in our minds slightly better, he's very good.
He will dribble when he is matched up with a very slow, short person. We get a lot of Turner questions in a row. What are the odds? At Colton with two N's underscore Jackson, a.k.a. Bacon Toasty, a.k.a. someone I have played Rocket League with. If you played Rocket League and didn't know, please hit me up on Twitter. He says, I see a lot of Miles Turner slander on Twitter. What is your opinion of him so far and expectations for him in the future? It's v- I obviously think highly of Turner. I defended him a ton last season, thought he was better than Sabonis up until this year, where now Sabonis is clearly substantially better. I think it's great that Turner has seemingly accepted this smaller role to help the team, because it's been huge ever since November when he, or late November, I guess, when he figured out his new role. He's been helping this team win games, and his incredible defensive impacts combined with just being a floor spacer, he's been good. So my opinion of him is pretty high in that way. And my expectations for him in the future is just he'll get a little bit better here and there, the things he's really good at, because that's what the team needs him to do.
Defer to my answer to the previous question. I think I said everything I wanted to say about him.
At Red Pepper Beard, Johan on Twitter, Miles' questions coming in hot again. I have three about Miles, of course. One, what are the characteristics of the perfect player in a trade for Miles? If you use a player, it doesn't have to be realistic. I see. Klay Thompson is the prototype for like the perfect Miles Turner trade partner.
Oh, mine is a stretch four thinking like Tobias Harris mixed with Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, that is hilarious, but yes.
No, I mean, stretch four, that's basically we give up for it.
I think Klay, I consider Klay a big wing. So
yeah, that's fair. He can play probably anything from two to four.
But I understand that why he's thought of as a two guard. Yeah. But that kind of mold is what I think.
Would Bradley Beal be a mold, or is that too many guards?
It's too many guards.
Right.
If you go the three guard, you have to be able to defend with the third guard, because one of them has to guard a wing, right?
Well, Brogdon.
So like Giroux, I think, would work better than Bradley Beal, for example.
Brogdon would be okay for that, though. He could guard the third
guard. That's true.
And, the one I always thought about, this is probably going to happen, but like if the Trailblazers decide to blow it up, Lillard would be a really cool.
Oh, that would be sick.
He's just a really good basketball player, but I mean, I think he's a Blazer for life. To be honest, I think he wants to be. I think that's how he ends his career. I don't know why.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. If they go micro, like prime Ibaka, I think would be an awesome kind of perfect fit.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
His prototype is very rare. Two, if they did trade Miles, what's the big rotation look like? I mean, who's the third center? Who's guarding Joel in a Philly 7-game series? Sabonis would try, and it would be weird, and then Goga would come in, and he would do not well enough in a playoff series. I would assume that they would just sign a minimum guy to be their third center.
Yeah, give Goga two years, though. I mean, this shouldn't happen.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not dumping on Goga.
A little bit. Goga could be that guy someday, for all we know.
Yeah, give another different Kyle Quinn the minimum, and you're done.
I mean, can I say, I believe the Pacers' best bet is Goga becomes kind of good next year, but good enough where you can trade him. I think that's what they're thinking. And then you could do that thing where they get really improved somewhere by trading him, but in holiday maybe, but that's like probably the thought.
I believe in Goga's future. So
I do too. I mean, the question becomes so good you really have to keep him because he's so good. That's the question.
And the third part of this question is, compare Miles to some fourth or fifth bananas on some championship teams. Is he better or worse? Absolutely better, because he can play on both ends.
Wasn't Tristan Thompson
the trouble? Is not his talent being better or worse than other fourth or fifth bananas. It's mostly a fit thing, right? And that's why Thompson's so good for the Cavs, like you just brought up. It's like all they needed him to do was grab misses, like just grab it. And he did great.
Right. I mean, the fourth.
Harrison Barnes, make your corner threes, like that kind of stuff.
Or, I mean, the other guys I can think of are like Chris Anderson was for the Heat probably 1 year as a fourth best player, which is.
Yeah.
Or
Chalmers, hit your threes.
Yeah. Was Tyson Chandler the fourth best guy or maybe the second best guy on that team? So maybe not. It was him, JJ,
or like even with teams that are good now, like PJ Tucker, hit a three, play defense. Like Miles is more talented than those guys. It's just fit, and like all those guys.
Rasheed Wallace was the fourth best player on the team, right?
Who?
Rasheed Wallace when they Pistons in 04, right?
Chauncey, Tayshaun, and Ben were 1, 2, 3, probably.
You don't think it was Billups, Rip, and Tayshaun?
Rip was amazing too. Yeah, dang, that team was.
That awesome. Team was really good. That's why they wanted.
I don't know who it was on that team. We'll have to ask Laz, our man.
They made five straight Eastern Conference Finals. That's why.
He's got the talent. So Miles has the talent. It's just the fit is the question. And we'll find out in the playoffs this year, because last year him and Domas did not play enough in the playoffs for me to have a solid opinion of the two. Our final Miles Turner question comes from Leah Young at Leah Forever Young. Do you think Miles took Sunday's game off in Portland to prove a point to fans? His social media accounts show how frustrated he is with all the so-called fan comments toward him. I don't think he ever would take a game off for social media stuff, although I do totally understand him being incredibly frustrated with people on the internet.
I mean, this is pure speculation. Do you think it's something to do with Kobe? I don't know. I mean, maybe he was already sick.
No, his illness came out before that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're making even sicker than you are, right? You're already sick and you're just like, oh, God, kind of thing.
Ducking Whiteside would have been a funnier question.
I mean, to be honest, I don't have any problem if a player thought because of the Kobe thing, didn't play in a game because they were so
Kyrie, Chris Paul, tons of guys are sitting out already.
It's okay because, you know, it was the most shocking thing that happened in the NBA in forever, it feels like. My life in the NBA, that was just like so sudden. I could see how some guys, especially maybe they were closer to him than other ones, right? I don't know Miles close to him at all. I know Kyrie was, and we give him
Miles tweeted a picture with him. So to directly address the question, no, I do not think that is why he did not play.
I think
Goga was sick in Golden State, so I think he just caught something and then.
They're all eating that bad shrimp at the restaurant. I mean, I think we don't give Miles enough credit for being the baller he is. I think, takes a lot of crap, but he goes up there and he plays really hard every night.
I'm glad he actually dunked on someone on Twitter recently, and I'm glad he did that. I think he's taking it less seriously now because, it's not a problem for him. Like, he figured out to delete it and get rid of it, and, that didn't totally coincide with him getting better, but it kind of did. So I applaud him. Maturing is the wrong word because that sounds like he was immature before and he wasn't, but I applaud him getting his brain in the right place to use social media again.
Yeah, in my opinion, and I don't know if it's good or bad, but I blame Larry Bird for all of Turner's problems. If Larry Bird didn't go on that stupid whatever interview and say he could be the best player in the league, Turner's problems would not exist the way they did.
Larry Bird also called Willie Cauley-Stein a $100 million player. So
yeah, I mean,
everything he said is...
I agree, but he totally set this unreal expectation for Turner in a way that just shouldn't be taken seriously.
Dude, every year, so a lot of people on Twitter who say, trade Miles, well, his value's still high. One, his value's not going anywhere. Two, the reason they say that is, because every year people who think Turner is good expect him to be a 20-point-a-game awesome score. It's like, no. That's not that should never have been how this was. And that, yes, I agree that Larry was a big factor in that being said.
Yeah, I think it's, like I said, it's this unreal expectation for Turner where if we had thought of him as, it's the guy who went 11th overall and he's become one of the best 50 players in the league, we'd be like, that's an awesome payoff for a guy who – in a draft where most of those guys are not any good right now, who went above him.
Guys, we're going to do this many times this week, last week, maybe next week even. Local ads. We want local ads on this show. I think it would be better for everybody that you don't have to hear about whatever thing that's trying to reach someone who is not like you at all versus someone who lives around you and is like you. So we're trying to get more local ads here on Locked On Pacers.
Yeah, I think we want local sponsors of any kind to come out and support us, help us keep doing this podcast, providing you guys this great Pacer content. And I think now, too, with this network, we've got Locked On Colts now, so we have a great way to reach kind of all sports fans. So you want me to read the how people can find?
Oh, no. I will gladly do it because you screwed up the word yesterday, Adam.
It's advertising.
It's advertising. Text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcasts.com/advertising. They'll hook you up with us and the Locked On Podcast Network sales team to get you on the right track. Once again, that is advertising to 33777 or lockedonpodcasts.com/advertising. We look forward to hearing from you. G. Patrick Lynch at P. Lynch 1966 says, why isn't Goga playing more in the G League? I wrote an article about this. I had the same question for the Pacers. Thank you. He is actually playing, I feel like, a little bit more recently where he'll get a first half stint for a few minutes. But I think if he's not going to play in the rotation, he should play in the G League because reps are great.
Yeah, I think part of it is one.
But you never know when there's going to be foul trouble.
Yeah, there's just have a lot of foul trouble and they get hurt a decent amount.
Yeah.
Or at least past history would show that. This year they've been actually healthier, a lot healthier than they've been in the past. So I think the foul trouble is an issue with those guys that you just need a third center. And I think like I said, you just need a third center on your roster. And he's good enough to play small amount of minutes to survive the team, essentially.
Right. Yeah, he's not playing a ton every game, and I agree that I think the G League would have more value than that, but the Pacers almost, like Adam just said, need it with, staying inside, there's injuries, there's foul trouble.
He's not like a college guy who hasn't played a full season. He played pro in Europe, so he's played 80 or 90 game seasons before.
Right, right.
I mean, he's not like those college guys don't really know how to play more than a 30 game season. He knows how to do that, so he's more professional than most college players, so I think he knows how to handle himself around the team. And it's just now for him, it's about getting in game shape, learning from Sabonis, how Turner had become better players.
Yeah, he actually has more appearances in games this year than Jeremy Lamb and Brogdon. I did not know that.
It's because those guys get hurt all the freaking time.
Yeah, so I actually agree. If they know or plan on him not playing in the NBA rotation, they should send him more to the G League. At Ketchum Caleb Ketchum says, Turner and Sabonis seem to be a plus this year. Yes, they do. What's the best version of their two-man game in the future, assuming steady development? Any creative play calling that could unlock more production best two big pairings in the modern era, and what could Turner Sabonis learn from them? Well, the problem is, with the last part of that question, is there aren't a ton that match their styles, right? Like, you could even go back to, like, Tim Duncan and David Robinson. But, like, the NBA in the days of two bigs was, like, they both are in the paint, right? So maybe you could look at Blake and Andre. But Blake is just a megastar who can dribble past defenders and stuff. It's really hard to find the right comp for them to base that off. But I like the the thought of the development and creative play calling. Like, what can you do to make them a little better together?
Could you run a pick and roll with them?
No, probably not.
Could you run
I think they've tried it like two times, and every time everyone's like, whoa, and it never works.
Yeah, I mean, right. So a lot of time with Turner, he's either in the corner or shifting to kind of the side perimeter, right? And it's kind of, he's like either the extra kick pass, or he's the guy that, like, is the top of the key-ish where he gets the kind of everybody collapses inside and is a wide-open kind of player. I mean, I think the best thing with Turner is if he continues to shoot, well, he's now back at 34%, but if he – right from three. But if he can get back to the 38 to 40 range, just stick him in the corner and let him train threes. If he needs to. That's the best.
Well, I would love elevator selfishly. Remember when they would run that for PG all the time with Weston Hibbert setting the screens?
Yeah, I wonder if they might do that with all the returns, because they don't really have a guy. I mean, I guess they have Warren, but Warren honestly doesn't need the screen to get to the
rim. It's an all-time awesome creative play, and it only works once a game, because once the other team sees it, they know how to easily get past it. But it is so funny to watch a helpless defender get slammed between two big men.
Well, it's really good for a guy who can, like, lurk around and just move around the perimeter and run around. It's kind of designed for Oladipo.
PG was killer on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think they can really, like, work the ball together. Sabonis can, but, like, not in a direct pick and roll situation. Like,
I think defensively they can work better together. I will say
that. Yeah, I agree. That's true.
A little more passing off and a little understanding of where, you know, you go on the perimeter. You know, like, I mean, I think they can, and maybe it's the way they want, but, like, Sabonis can spend a little more time defending the rim than he does, right? Like, I think he can handle himself enough. We've seen about a couple guys. Because, like, he's not going to be as good as Turner, but, like, if something happens and there's a switch or whatever and Turner's good perimeter, like, he should be more willing and less hesitant and say, I trust myself to protect the rim for this play kind of thing.
I screenshotted a question twice. We actually are on our last one, but it was phrased very well to be a great ending.
All right.
CW Moran 13 has a fun, awesome ending question for us, Adam. Fun Vic return over unders. How many home games does it take to get a This Is My City celebration over under 1.5?
Under.
Under. I think he does it in the first game too.
I think he does it when he comes out and they clap and they introduce him. He just sits there and
turns. Oh, that'd be cool.
Right. I was thinking if he comes off the bench, it'd be when he comes out of, like, off the bench and they sub him in the game. But it'll be right at the beginning when he starts, you know, and everybody stands for the tip and he just starts doing it. Probably.
We're at the end of the show, right? We've dwindled the listeners. I'm going to give my hot take on the This Is My City thing. That is not what he said.
What did he say?
He 100%. I will defend this take to the death. He 100% said, this is my shit. It is so. I think it's very obvious to lip read it out of him.
Okay, it was a San Antonio game, right?
Yes, it was.
All right, you need to stall for a minute.
Go find it. I am convinced he says it twice, and the second time I think it's almost more obvious. And it's like it kind of makes sense. Like, oh, buzzer beater. Like, yeah, this is my shit. And I get how it got interpreted as city. They don't look that crazy different, but I think it's pretty obvious. I hope you're finding it now.
I'm trying to find the video. This is going to take way too long.
Yeah, I hope he does it in the first game. I mean, I think that'd be awesome for him.
I've got it. Hold on. Give me.
All right. I won't go on to the next one
yet. Never mind. The media cannot be played.
Oh, my goodness, Adam. How hard is this to do?
I have got it. Give me 1 second. All right. We drain the bank in three. It's a really grainy. Let's see. They show him. Let's see. Hold on.
Oh, man.
He's doing his little. Yeah, you're right. He definitely says this. He definitely says that first.
100% does not say city.
But then he doesn't pump to the ground at first. He just
so they turned it into This Is My City. So maybe he'll say that now because that's what the marketing.
Well,
is.
That's what he says now.
I don't think that's what he said the first time when this started. So
yeah, but remember he pointed to the ground.
What was that like? His third Pacers game, he's getting like, "This is my city." Like,
yeah, but then it's become a thing now when he hits a big three.
It's a Wade thing. Yeah. Wade started that celebration, but
sure, that's fine. But now this is Vic City. Pacer fans' defense, and I'm one of them, it was at a moment, five game or three games or whatever, we just lost Paul George, and we needed somebody to reclaim the mantle as the best Pacer player, right? We didn't know who it was going to be. You know, it was Reggie, then it was Granger, and then it was PG, and now who's going to be, and it became Vic. So,
Vic hits a clutch go-ahead shot over under three games. The problem is they play crappy teams.
Yeah, the Raptors are the first time to play somebody good. I guess they play the Mavs too, but the Raptors are probably the first time they have a shot at that.
Yeah, I'll take the over because I think they get clobbered by the Mavs, actually.
Okay, I'll take the over too, actually, to be honest.
But I think it happens before the All-Star break. I will say that.
Okay, that's fair.
Three, I like this one too. Thingamajig references Wednesday night on the broadcast. Over, under 0.5. Definitely over, right?
Yeah.
Wait, I probably would have gone over 2.5.
Can I tell you, I'm still over Chris Denari ruining it for me. I'm going to be honest. So, like, Moran and I had
put probably from Quinn in parentheses. I think it's probably from Chris.
Well, so Moran and I had dedicated a lot of time to watch that show each week. And it was on the night of a Pacers game. So, like, we're going to watch the game, and then we'll watch it afterwards. That was our plan. And then we found out about it because we didn't want to go and read it. I think, and then he ruined it during the broadcast, and I went, son of a bitch.
That's funny. I know he didn't mean any ill. That's just
no, I know he didn't mean to do it. I'm just saying I'm still over it. I can still be mad about it.
The last question is great ending to this mailbag. Thank you, everybody, for submitting questions from this over-under thing. Points Vic scores Wednesday, over-under 15. I said 14-4 earlier this show. I will maintain that and say under. But in the spirit of the question, I don't want to say under.
I think over for this game. I don't know.
The Bulls do suck.
Bulls suck. You can hit 3 or 4 threes, get a couple free throws, call it a game.
Yeah, that's true. I hope for the story's sake it's over. I think it's going to be under. Guys, thank you for the questions. And if you're still here and you submitted a question, please submit one question per tweet next time.
Yeah, and I guess if you tweeted us like, so we recorded this at 8 o'clock Eastern. So if you tweeted after that, we obviously didn't have your question.
Yeah, sorry.
So we'll save them for another time.
Yeah. Thank you guys, of course, for the questions. Tomorrow will just be fun. Vic's coming back. Bulls preview stuff. That's just me. And then Adam and I will recap all the Vic action. And we have a fun thing coming on Friday, but I don't want to ruin it ahead of the Vic return. So thank you guys so much for asking questions and tuning in today. And we will see you tomorrow.